to introduce our main speaker for this evening. Stacy from Encinitas.
Hi, everyone. I'm Stacy. I'm an alcoholic. And welcome for the newcomers, and thank you, Emron. I'm not sure where you went for your 10-minute. That was killer. That just reminded me that we have to do the possibilities, and God will do the impossibilities. And that was a great story of that. This meeting reminds me of my first meeting that I ever went to, which was in Berkeley, California. I went up there to rehab, and they took us to a meeting the second day I was there, and it was called the Wild Bunch. And this brings back so many great memories. Anyway, so I'll go on with the beginning, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. My sobriety date is September 25th, 2000. I have a sponsor. I sponsor women. And by the grace of God, I've only had to pick up one 24-hour chip at that Wild Bunch meeting in Berkeley. So I'm very, very grateful. Grew up in a normal family. I was the oldest of four kids. Two loving parents. We played sports. We went on family vacations. Absolutely normal. I'm the only alcoholic. Can't figure that one out. But I had a great childhood. Like many of us have shared, I felt like I was kind of overseeing everything, like I wasn't really present. I really didn't get how you got it, and how I didn't feel like I fit in all the way, but I didn't feel like a misfit. I was popular. I did okay in school. I had a lot of friends. I had a great normal life, but I just didn't feel like I was connected, that I was there, that I got it, that I felt okay with myself, that I felt okay with what was going on. And I picked up my first drink at maybe 14 just to fit in, hanging out with in our the town that I grew up in. It was a small town, so we go to, like, the local parks and kind of hang out and have beer on the golf course and just have I remember having Tuborg beer, gold beer or whatever, and then easily switched over to Tickle Pink Boone's Farm. I didn't like the taste of alcohol at all. And Boone's Farm Tickle Pink, I could handle that. And I just wanted to fit in, and I was very social and had a lot of fun. And like I said, it was a small town, so we'd walk up and down the main street and wait for, there was this older guy, 2 years older than us, but that was a little nerdy, and he'd always pick us up. The four of us girls would walk every Friday and Saturday night and take us to different parties and kind of fit in, and we hung out with some of the older jocks and some other cheerleaders, although we weren't part of any of that. And junior, I'm getting mixed up now, I haven't said it for a while, in high school, and we were on our way to a dance. And we were the second car leaving the dance, going to a pizza parlor, very innocent growing up. And we had a little bit of those airline bottles and we're drinking a little bit, but not totally out of control by any means. And the driver, I was in the front seat, the driver looked up and someone was passing her and she swerved and went onto the golf course and hit a retaining wall. And at that time, my leg went compound commuted, my whole head went straight in, I broke a bunch of ribs, I don't remember the rest. And all I remember is feeling warm blood on my leg. My dad's in the ambulance with me, and I'm going to the hospital. Hi, Dad. My dad's here. Hearing my story for the first time. So there's a lot of God here right now. Anyways, and so I woke up in the ICU. I was in intensive care for probably 3 weeks, 2 weeks. Had to get, I don't even know what I all get, but my lung collapsed, a bunch of stuff, and ended up being homeschooled for, I think, 3 months. And that not feeling fit in all the way, although I had friends, but just didn't feel good inside, that kind of lowered it a little bit. And I was kind of isolated. The friends I thought I had weren't coming by. It wasn't like I was, you know, popular. I wasn't going to school. And, you know, I had a loving family and a good support group, and I homeschooled at home and went back to school probably 3 months later, and I had a full cast for a year. I went back after having, and this is what I remember, dermabrasion all over my head. So I had this thing around my head, and I'm a junior in high school trying to fit in. And I seriously do not remember being depressed or going into self-pity, although I'm sure I did. I remember just getting into survival mode, acting as if, doing whatever I could do. Like, it was cool that I had a big cast because everyone could sign it, and that's when we'd put, like, the rock bands on the side. And then I'd cut them off. Every time they get shorter, they'd hang up, like, on my in my room, so they were, like, decorations. And my life kind of just went on, and, you know, now I'm a senior in high school, and I'm dating this athlete guy, and I'm thinking, whoa, this is pretty cool, and having fun and doing a lot of stuff. And my girlfriend's like, well, where are you going to go to college? And I'm like, I hadn't really thought about it. My parents didn't go to college. I hadn't really done a lot of the planning. And she's like, I'm going to San Diego State. I'm like, okay, me too. And so I got accepted to San Diego State. I was not a good student at all in high school, probably a C average. And back then you could get into college pretty easy. And I am an 18-year-old scared-to-death virgin going to San Diego State when the frat parties were freaking wild. And there's keggers, and this is how I remember it, and like a million people, and everyone knows everyone. And I'm just scared to death, and I'm stayed by the keg the whole time. And I'm just like standing there like drinking, go back to the dorm room, throw up. I had a like bucket next to my bed. And it kind of like that was the beginning of my social life in college. And after my first year, I was on academic probation. After my second year, I was going to junior college and still holding on to a little bit of college. And after my third year, I was not. And I continued to do some junior college and kind of move on. And at that time, I had met my ex-husband now. And he was very popular in a fraternity, and he was very social. So us together were very social. We were the social organizers. We had a blast. We had tons of friends. You know, we were smart. We had it going on. We kind of had some jobs. I worked at San Diego State. And so we decided that we were going to moved to the beach, and we moved to Pacific Beach from San Diego State. So we went from one kind of party atmosphere to another. And at this time, I was looking for work, and I didn't really know. I went to college for, you know, the GE, and then I went into journalism. But not really knowing why I did, I didn't know what I wanted to do going to college. I didn't know what I had passion for. I didn't know what I liked. I didn't know what I was good at. I just went. And I ended up doing some journalism classes, and I liked some of the advertising part of it. And my girlfriend was working as a secretary at Family Fitness Corporate, at that, which is 24 Hour now. She's like, they're looking for an advertising assistant, you know, 3 hours a day. I'm like, okay. And I'm like 20 at this time. I'm 22, I think. No, 21. And I'm like, okay. So I do that, and that job that was 3 hours a day, the company was just beginning at that time. There was one owner and a very small company, and he saw something in me from the 6 months that I was there, and this is back when we're typing everything, we're having to deliver everything on paper, and I'm just the assistant, but I'm doing the work. Like, I'm getting it done. Like, you tell me what to do, I'm going to do it. And he saw something in me that I didn't know that I had, and the advertising manager got fired. And by the grace of God, I got hired to be advertising manager with no college degree at 22 years old in this beginning growing company. I don't know how that happened, but it was a total God thing. And I worked my ass off every single day, every hour of the day. And my husband and I, or my boyfriend and I, which then became my first husband, got married. And our drinking and other substances it had slowed down, but we were still participating, and there were still weekend parties, and we'd go out with all our friends, and I'm in kind of the beginning of my career. He's working, and we're still kind of doing the same thing that we had been doing in college. And so we get married, have this, big wedding and a lot of cakes and a big after party. And come back to San Diego, it's like, hey, now it's kind of time to get our act together. But the drinking continued, meaning that we were still partying like we were in college. And I got pregnant when we had our beautiful daughter. And at that time, it was like this. My career was growing, and we're kind of doing okay, and my daughter's born. And I'm like, God, this is before she was born, when I was not drinking. I'm like, God, I feel so good. I don't think I'm going to drink. I'm not associating there's a problem with drinking, because I didn't have a huge amount of consequences or anything. But I'm like, God, I'm feeling okay, and I'm really getting a lot done, and my career's growing. And probably a month after she was born, we went out with some friends and kind of started, drinking like we did on the weekends before. And it wasn't like an everyday kind of thing. It was just, on the weekends are fun. So the social life of ours was still continuing, and the maturing wasn't happened. I didn't have those mature tools. My career began to grow, but shortly after that, my husband was in a severe construction accident and severed his spinal cord. And that was a 3-year getting our lives back together, and we didn't survive that. And we separated and split custody with my daughter, and that was a tough time as well. But that allowed me to grow a little bit, to grow my career, but also feel a little victimized, like, why is this happening to me? I worked so hard. Why did this happen? Why was he like this? Blah, blah, blah. So I was searching for all the wrong things. And my life kind of went down. My career went great, because that was the only thing holding me together. So I still had that double life I was living. That career held me together. And in 1998. Now I'm like into my life. 1998, the company merged, and it became 24 Hour Fitness. Life wasn't what it was that I knew at 21 years old, and that's what my survival mechanism was. That was my foundation. I had to keep going because of that. And when it merged and things changed, I couldn't survive that either. And I went into a year and a half of downward spiral. And I quit that job, going to go find a better job that they'll treat me better. I switched a bunch of different businesses. And by the last probably 4 months of getting secretarial positions, not employed, starting to pawn stuff out of my house, $20,000 in debt, not taking care of my daughter like I need to be taking care of her, it just went downhill, and I had absolutely nothing left, and not a penny that I owned at all. My family, I'd still see them once in a while, but towards the end, it was like, I remember my mom's like, if you don't call me every 2 weeks, we're calling the cops. And so I knew I had to call her every 2 weeks, because there is no way in hell I want her to show up in San Diego. And so I'd call her on her lunch hour when I knew she'd go to lunch, on her office phone, and say, I'm okay, everything's fine. And that gig didn't last long either. And at my sobriety date, September 25th, so in August, I'm like, I'm done. I had absolutely nothing. I was 180 pounds. I had my hair's all scraggly. I had jaundice. I'm living in this beach town, thinking I got it all together, because I used to have a career, hanging out with people that I would never hang out with. And what happened was I called my parents, and I knew right when I called them the gig was up. And I'm like, I need help. They're like, you know, we're waiting for that call. And, okay, well, get your stuff in storage and, you know, kind of get your things in order and come fly up. We'll send you a ticket. Okay, well, alcoholics don't work that way. I'm like, oh, yeah, sure. You know, 3 weeks later, I'm still doing what I'm doing and nothing's done. And at 39 years old, I look out my apartment window and there's my mom and dad. And I am so filled with shame. I grew up in such a loving, wonderful family with such supportive parents. And I look down and I'm just, I felt so ashamed. And they come upstairs, they're like, get your shit in a suitcase, because they had already researched some rehabs. I didn't really know anything about AA. They're like throwing stuff. I'm like, can I just take a shower? I'm on my second bottle of wine. I'm like, can I just take a shower? So they let me take it. This is what I remember. They let me take a shower. The plan was that they were going to come down and we were going to have dinner with my daughter, who at that time was in sixth grade. And we were going to have dinner with her that night, then go up. Well, they saw me, and they're like, that's not happening. And so they throw me in the back of the car, and they came from the Bay Area and drive me up to the Bay Area. And I'm in the back seat with my comforter that I had to bring, and I'm sleeping. And then I remember waking up around the grapevine, and I remember starting to talk and kind of tell stories on kind of some of the stuff that I was doing and just kind of talking freely because I was surrendering. There was hope. I knew whatever was going to be there, which I had no idea what was going to be there, was better than where I was because I couldn't get anywhere else except where I was. And we stopped, I think, and ate something. Made it up to the Bay Area, went to sleep, thinking I'll just, you know, be able to sleep for a couple days, kind of whatever. All I remember is my dad comes in and is going to get your effing ass up, and we're going to rehab. And I'm like, okay, you know, I didn't say it like that. So I got up, and at that time, my mom owned a business, and so she's working downstairs in her office, and there's my sister, my little sister, and she worked for her. The shame and the guilt again. I'm in not the best state, and I got to see a family member like that. And I had tried for so many years to stay away from anyone seeing me like that. And my first assessment was at Summit Hospital in Oakland. That was a little scary. And there was a bunch of bars. This is bars around the window. But I remember taking the assessment questions. I had never done those before, and I'm like, you know, and I was just so whatever it was going to be. I was so scared to death. I was petrified. Whatever it was going to be, it was going to be. We went there. We went to like four other rehabs. I didn't have insurance because I hadn't had a job for a year and a half. So we're just trying to see wherever I can get into at that time. And I ended up in a rehab in Berkeley. And thank God. It was called Newbridge Foundation. And it was a fantastic rehab. And we couldn't afford for me to spend the night there, so I did the outpatient, which was 8 to 5. So, 39 years old. Every day, my mom and dad would drive me to rehab. They'd pick me up at 5. Then we'd come home and talk about my day. And then we'd write across on the calendar, one day of sobriety. And then we did that for 30 days. And I talk about this so loving because I'm so friggin' lucky. And we did the 30-day, and then I did, I think, another month, half-day outpatient. And my dad's very debit credit. You know, blah, here's the money. What do you got coming in? What do you got going out? Okay, so I'm like, after aftercare, he's like, okay, get a job. Okay, here's where you're at. Here's what you have. We'll give you $20 a week. That's it for coffee. You know? And so I went and got a job, and I applied after having this huge, big career as a secretary's. And I became a secretary, which was absolutely lovely and wonderful. 8 to 5, every day I went to a noon meeting. And I did that for a year and a half. I stayed up in Northern California. I'd see my daughter every couple months or so, but I wasn't financially stable enough to come back to San Diego. I wasn't emotionally stable enough to come back to San Diego. I didn't have enough sobriety under my belt to come back. I didn't know that. If it was up to me, I would have just, you know, gathered some money or borrowed some money and come back. God was keeping me there to get this foundation, this cocoon kind of thing. I don't know what you want to call it. But it helped me get the foundations and the basics. And I did AA every day, and I got involved in some other meetings. I took commitments. I got a sponsor right away, because in rehab they tell you to call 5 people every day when you get out. There was 5 guys and 1 girl in my rehab group. The girl didn't live in the Bay Area. She lived in some other state. So I'm calling the 5 guys every day like they tell us to do. So I go to a meeting in my hometown, and everyone would get together at the same meeting. And this gal comes up to me and goes, you're not supposed to be calling my husband every day. And she says, here's your new sponsor. And that's how I got my first sponsor, thank God. And thank God I learned that. And so I had a sponsor. I did the steps. At step 9, I had to make an amends to the owner of this company, my mentor, the guy that gave me my whole entire world and the chance. I had to come back down to San Diego in person. I had stolen money from the company. I had let him down. I had done some other stuff. And I had to go and tell him the truth. And I was scared to death. But I knew I had to do it no matter what. And I did it. And we do our steps not knowing the outcomes. We just do them because we have to, because we want to be sober. We want recovery. And I went and did it. And he's still running companies and opening some other companies. And I come in and I kind of say, you know, I'm sorry for my harm. I'm going to start paying you $50 a month, blah, blah, blah. Again, I don't really think he's correlating what I'm even saying, because he's very entrepreneurial in his business thing. So we have this conversation. That was that. I leave. He calls me a week later and he said, what did you say you were doing again up there? And I'm like, I'm a secretary at Pacific Bell. He goes, well, I'm opening a brand new fitness chain. Will you come back and do it with me? Because of that amends. Because I followed directions without knowing the outcome. So he paid for me to move back, paid for my first month's rent in my apartment, and gave me a chance again. That allowed me my relationship with my daughter. At this time, she's in eighth grade, just starting eighth grade, or middle of eighth grade, and I have not a dime to my, no money at all. We set up, I had to go slowly with my ex-husband, and we went back to the two-week, but I had to build that trust with her. I had to build that relationship. I had to learn how to be a mom. I had to learn how to suit up and show up no matter what. I had to learn how to be there first for her. And we shared the 2 weeks that I would have her, every other 2 weeks, we shared a one-bedroom. My furniture was from Salvation Army, which there's nothing wrong with that because it turned out nice, but it was a very small place. We shared a bed. She's in eighth and ninth grade, and we're sharing a bed. And I'm happy with just nothing. I'm happy just to live and have life. We built a little foundation. I went to work every day. The job required me to go to Coronado every day from Encinitas. I went to the Alano Club every single day. I built my foundation. I got a sponsor. I did what we were supposed to do. I was always scared of talking to strangers, to putting myself out there, and I've always been like that since day one. And that's what kind of was my thing through high school. I was afraid to be the one to go talk to anyone. And what helped me was when I came to San Diego, I got a sponsor right away. I threw my ass in so much service. Anyone that needed a commitment for anything, any event happening, I raised my hand. That allowed me to talk to you. to have a relationship with you, to get to know you, to go to another meeting and see you, and I felt more comfortable. And I did that for probably the first 7 years of my sobriety. I'm going to go a little bit past. So through my first 7 years of sobriety, I was very busy in service. I was busy being a mom. I was really popular in the fellowships. You go in a room, everyone knows you. You do a lot of the service. You're board president. You do this, you do that. So I got really involved in AA. I did AA softball, and that had become my world. And at like 8 years, I'm sponsoring a lot. I'm really enjoying it. But at that time, I'm not in the book as much as I hear other people talking about being in the book. I wasn't taught that way. And I'm doing a little bit more therapy sponsoring, especially with women. And I'm starting to believe my own shit. And I'm going backwards, and I don't realize I'm going backwards, but I'm becoming a little bit restless, irritable, and discontent. And I know when I'm getting there, because then I start trudging. And my sobriety, by the grace of God, has been a pink cloud. There's been bad times, there has been, but everything's better than what it was. Living in that little apartment with my daughter, but sober, that was freaking awesome. And so, at about 8 years, I started believing my own shit, and I started just going a little bit backwards and spiraled and not going to as many meetings and kind of thinking I had it all going on and my career's all hot shit and blah, 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 and I know everything. I already know AA. And I see my ex-husband, who's now in the program, and I see him start to change a little bit. And he's got 5 years less than me, and I'm like, what are you doing? Like, what meeting are you going to? And he's telling me about this meeting that he's going to in, this meeting that he's going to in Encinitas, where the secretary has 15 years, blah, blah, blah. Everyone has a lot of sobriety. They're in the book. They have to be in the book. They're doing this. They all meet once a week, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, oh, can I get that format? I'm going to start that because I want what you're saying. I've seen you change a little bit. And he's like, well, no, you can't really, I don't know if that will work. Let me pray about it. That's what he always says. And I'm like, okay. And so he gives me his sponsor's phone number, who I have no idea who it is. And this man calls me. He's older and kind of loud. And he's like, I said, can I get that format? I'm really interested. I understand kind of how you're teaching these people and how to read the book and the format for the meeting. I really want to start it. And he's like, you can't give away what you don't have. And I'm like, my life was good. I just was kind of a little bit trudging, but I'm have my career going. My finances are in order. My relationships are in order. My family's all happy. Everyone's good. He's like, It's not the same. I can't even explain it to you. You'll never get it. I'm not even going to try and tell you. He said, I don't work with women, but if you promise to teach other women this, because there's not a women's group like this in North County, if you promise to teach women this, I will do it with you. But you have to follow what I say. And I'm like, well, okay, let me ask my sponsor, blah, blah, blah. So I asked her. And she says, I know you. I know you're getting restless. You need to do what you need to do. Just read me some of the stuff if you want or let me know what's going on. I said, what? So I meet with this guy. He's 65 years old, wearing a cowboy hat, and says the F word, every other word. And he does not stop talking. And he says, you're going to call me every day at 9:30, do or die, on the dot, 9:30, and we're going to meet once a week at Starbucks, and you're going to wear appropriate clothes, and you're going to sit across from me, and we're going to go through this book. And when it says you must, you must. And it says you do this, you do this. No ifs, ands, or but. The book is a truth. You follow that book. He said, there is a God, and it's not you. And you got to let go of everything you think you know, because you think you know a lot. And get rid of all that AA slogan, because you don't even know what that means. And he says, you just say shit, you don't even know what you're saying. And he says, and you're going to read this, and we're going to do it, but your goal is, I don't even care if you get happy or sad or whatever happens to you. Your goal is to teach other people. That's it. Whatever comes out of your life will come out of your life. I'm like, I'm in. You know, I like that kind of, I'm very direct. I like that kind of talk. I understand that kind of talk. And so, we go, how much time do I have? Oh, good. Okay. So we go, we start, and I'm doing the every single day call times, and I'm not saying a word, by the way. I might say one thing of whatever's going on, and he just goes on, and he's in the book telling me about alcoholism. I finally learned alcoholism has nothing to do with the drinking. It has to do with my brain. It has to do with that psychic change, and how I need to do the psychic change is change my effing behaviors. If I don't change behaviors, if I don't change my actions, I will never have that psychic change. I will never get the rewards. And I was doing half measures of giving the program everything in my life except relationships, career, you know, that kind of stuff. I was half measuring it. I was sponsoring, but at my own convenience. I was sponsoring who I wanted to sponsor. I was not strenuously working with another alcoholic. And so when I did this with him, I'd call every single day, and then we'd meet. And the meeting wasn't just, he would only read, I wasn't allowed to read, and sometimes we'd read one sentence and we'd be there for a frickin' hour. And through his stories, he was telling me about alcoholism and about changing behaviors and about doing the possibilities and letting God do the impossibilities. And I started to get it, but I didn't get it. I was listening. And little by little, as we went through this, I began to change behaviors. And I'll tell you, what held me back from changing behaviors was that freaking fear. That fear held me back from having the courage to change the behaviors. As I changed behaviors and I saw things start to change, maybe not like I thought they would, but I had to let go and surrender, I began to love myself a little bit, which was unbeknownst to the deep love that I get to get. And so we know inside what's right and wrong. I still kind of wanted to conveniently wrap it around what I wanted to do or what I thought I wanted to do. And so we worked strenuously. It took us a year and a half to get through the first 103. We only got to 103. We didn't do the stories. During that time, at 6 months through that, I started working with another girl this way. And that's when it really began to change. Working with another woman, call times. So now, not only am I doing his call times, now I'm doing her call times, and I'm meeting with her. And I got notes in my book. Some of them I don't understand all the way. Some I do. But now I have the tools to teach out of the book and not out of my own bullshit that I was starting to believe. And I like that. I'm a black and white. Like, I like... This program is black and white. It's in the book. This is just my opinion. There's no other way. That's what works for me in sponsorship and in doing it. And so what happened after the year and a half, I grew as a person. I had opened my own business a year before I met him. The recession had happened. Part of my story, I left Family Fitness, went to rehab, did all that, started this new health club chain. That thing fell apart, and I was without a job for a while, and I'm like, I don't know what to do now. And I ended up at an advertising agency, and my expertise was in advertising through my whole career. I ended up at an advertising agency. God forbid how I got there. Would have ever wanted to go there? No, because I wanted to stay in the health club industry. I ended up there. That 2.5 years of very humble experience for me, because again, I'm in a brand new field. They all know what they're doing. I don't have a clue. I'm just being humble and suiting up and showing up and trying to learn. I then, when the recession hit, they lost their clients. I connected with some of my health club people, and I opened my own ad agency. And with just faith and with just hoping I can, I'm still paycheck to paycheck, trying to pay my rent, trying to support my daughter. And I swear to God, because of the way this program works and because of helping other people and working with other women and giving my time to AA, my business has continued to grow. I haven't had to do extra networking, and I do call times during the days no matter what. And so what was happening is now I'm doing call times with him. I'm in the book. I'm trying to help another woman. Well, she can only get to like 3 months of this because she's done. I help so many women that stop at a certain point because it is, you want to surrender. You really want to surrender. But when it gets to the point where someone's telling you what to do and how to do it, or telling you that you're, you know, very direct, like I would once in a while, you know, text and say, I'm in here and I'm very uncomfortable, and I would get back, I don't care if you're effing uncomfortable. You have been, it's time for you to blah, 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 you know, whatever. So I'm sponsoring that way because that's what's changing people's lives, or that's what's getting them to move the other way. And what happened during this journey for me, so he moves to Oklahoma. I still have my other sponsor. I'm still sponsoring this way. No matter what, do or die, I have continued to sponsor this way. I'm not the most popular. I'm not liked. No, that's not the right word. I'm not very clicky. I'm not any of that. I spend probably 10 hours a week on AA. One of those is a meeting. The rest is on call times and in the book with other people. But it has changed my life. I follow what that book tells me to do. Therefore, I can teach it. Therefore, I can live it. And after 2 years of working with him, and he moved, and, you know, I've been trying to, you know, the perception of getting married, having a normal family like I thought I was going to have the first time, you know, wanting to be loved, wanting to be special. I've been trying to fix that on my own. And finally, 5 years ago, I'm like, I had to say out loud, because who I was picking, who was coming in my life, whatever you want to call it, was not working. And I had to say out loud and talk about the deepest surrender that I've had to do besides coming in this room was, God, if you want me to be single the rest of my life, I will. And I will do your service. And to say that out loud to God scared the living shit out of me, because I didn't want to. And I spent 2 years traveling. I met a bunch of yoga people that I do yoga with. We went to Bali. We went to Hawaii. I met a whole other host of people. I started really getting involved in other stuff that I had passion for that I didn't even know I had passion for. Instead of trying to find him or what or where, I just followed my heart, and I fell in love with Stacy. And I don't know how that happened, but it did. And it did with God. And unbeknownst to me, I meet this freaking amazing man, and I have the absolute best husband in the whole wide world. Better than anything I could have ever dreamed of or thought of. And that's all God. That's all this program. And nothing has changed from the beginning to now that if I continue to help others get out of my way, I have lived selflessly for very many years. And if I can live unselflessly and care for others and be kind and considerate, I'm going to end with a story of doing the opposite than what you want to do. There's been many stories of this that has happened through my sobriety of learning this way of sponsorship and by being sponsored this way that has gotten me through another level of what I thought it would be, and then the end result was something more amazing than I thought it was. And 3-4 years ago, my mom's going through these things, and she's playing a victim role, let's just say that. And I don't know how to operate very well with that, because I'm not like that, but I'm very compassionate to how she feels and whatever. And I want this relationship so bad that I used to have with her, but things have changed. And I'm not happy, and I'm just fighting it. And that resentment came, and I do not do well with resentments. And resentments will lead to death. And I call, and I bitch, and I say, this is what's going on, this is what's happening. You know, she wants me to go meet her in Palm Springs with her friends, but I know I'm going to get ditched, and she's going to go gambling with her friends, and then she's not even going to see me, and I'm going to spend the money to go out there, and blah, blah, blah. And he goes, I don't effing care what you want. Your job is to be the absolute best daughter you can be. Your goal is to come back on that way home without a resentment and feeling good about what you did, no matter what. And if she wants to go to In-N-Out Burger and eat, okay, this is something I would never do, you're going to go to In-N-Out Burger and you're going to enjoy your dinner. Okay, I heard it. I did it. Not In-N-Out. But I went I went to Palm Springs. I rented my own room. She was there with her friends at someone else's house. I surprised her on her birthday. I met her at these people's house. That was only the 1 hour of the 3 hours I saw her the whole entire weekend. I spent my own time at Embassy Suites by the pool running, trying to rearrange my schedule around her schedule, and I'm not saying this anything bad against her, because it wasn't at all. My job was to be the best daughter I could and not come back with a resentment. What I did after that, I called her every Sunday, no matter what, whether I wanted to talk to her or not. Whether we had anything to talk about for the first 6 months, no. It was about the weather, it was about golf, whatever that was happening. Little by little, that relationship began to change. Little by little, I wanted to go visit her. Little by little, she wanted to come and visit. Little by little, we got to open up and got to know each other and found a love that we hadn't found. But I had to let her go through what she had to go through. I had to go through what I had to go through and still be loving and not have resentment. And she's currently fighting cancer right now, and I will tell you, I am so proud that I was the best daughter I could be, and I'm still the best daughter. And that resentment I had 4 years ago would have killed that relationship, because I know I would have taken it there. But I was told to suit up and show up, and who cares what you effing think? You be the best daughter you can. And that's what I do for my family and my friends and my daughter, to be the best mom I can be. So thank you for letting me share.